Today's Rewind episode is all about lifestyle choices. Sean and I discuss the practical stuff: diet, exercise, stress management, and so much more. If you are looking for those small, sustainable changes that can really make a difference, this episode is for you. Also, just a reminder, if you're looking for additional support, please go over to the Nexus Fertility Community, where we are still currently running the 24-day exercise challenge, helping to build positive routines and habits moving into 2026. Enjoy. Welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast, a podcast designed to help, support, and educate men as they go through their own fertility struggles. I'm Kieran.
And I'm Sean. And we'll do that by sharing our stories of what we went through, as well as having guests share their knowledge and experience. Right. Let's get into today's episode. Hello, welcome to episode 8 of the Male Fertility Podcast. Here we are again. And I think probably a good place to follow on from the last episode, which was all about mindset. This episode is all about lifestyle and how we can implement lifestyle changes to assist a fertility journey. And I've gone straight in there with the J word. Why not? Never too early for that. But before we go into today's episode and get into that, how's things, Kieran?
Yeah, I'm good, buddy. I'm really good. Busy. It's that time of year where everyone seems to have a cold and things like that. We've talked about it before, but we are generally all fit and well. How about you, mate?
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Got nothing much more to add than that. Ill.
It's busy. It's that time of year, isn't it? Where you get in the trenches. So we all know that snow is probably around the corner, and it's like, one more push and spring will be here.
Well, mate, you live up north. Where I am in sunny Cornwall, it was 13 degrees today.
Well, they're temperatures we dream of in summer, mate.
Yeah, no, it's we have the mildest winters in the UK. Well, I don't know about the UK, but certainly in England, because we're just surrounded by water, warm water, but we get the brunt of all the storms. So.
Yeah, it's... Beautiful place to be, though, even in a storm, mate. Obviously, you won't want to go too close to those edges near you, but I'd imagine the sea looks pretty impressive when it's
a
big storm rolling in.
Yeah, and we do feel it. We live literally on top of a hill, 1 mile from the Atlantic. So sometimes I'm kind of lying there at night when there's high winds, just thinking, oh, is that a roof tile I can hear that's just gone?
Well, I've never lived so far away from the coast. Like, obviously, brought up in Brighton, lived there. And then we moved inland a little bit, but I could still get to the coast pretty quick. But we're like bang in the middle of the country here. So it's like 2 hours either way to see some sea. But hey, we'll return one day.
Boys. Yeah, right. We're at the risk of digressing, but I feel you. I grew up in a coastal town in Devon, and I moved to London for work, and then met my missus, who's a Londoner. I ended up being there for 15 years, and I remember once driving, and I won't name the town, because just in case someone's from there, but we drove to our nearest sea, which was in Essex, and we drove 2 hours to get there on this warm, sunny day. I remember just getting there and saying, is this it? Are you joking? This is not a beach. This is like a slip of sand with some murky water.
Mate, I think, generally, like, some of my best memories are of the sea. Like, just kayaking as a kid and fishing and cooking it on the beach. And it was the prime life, mate. I took it for granted there.
You cannot be unhappy near the sea. Like, it's just an incredible source of nature, and getting there is a great way to clear a head. And
yeah,
but anyway, we are digressing. We keep doing it, but
they're used to it now. They're used to it.
Yeah, exactly. people probably just skip to probably like 5, 6, 7 minutes in, thinking I'm not listening to all that crap at the beginning.
Right.
But yeah. Yeah, so diet and lifestyle. It's all about how people can make improvements to their lifestyle and hopefully make changes to their fertility. I can't think of anyone better to talk about that than yourself, because you did it. You got yourself from 1,500 sperm up to 4 million, which enabled you to then use those for your fertility treatment. And you now do it for a job. You're the male fertility PT. So you take it from here.
Take it from here, Ed.
I'll just mute and see you on the next episode.
I'll just see us out, mate. It's fine. Yeah. So there's loads you can do. Like, and I think this is one of the key issues, especially around male fertility. Like, you get given loads of advice, but not really told how to implement it. You know, you're told, you know, you've got to exercise more. You've got to change your diet. You've got to kind of, reduce your alcohol. You've got to stop smoking if you smoke, and reduce all these stresses. And then you leave and you kind of stood outside in the car park thinking, well, how the bloody hell do I do all that? You know, and that's the position I found myself in. I found myself basically looking into the abyss going, I don't know where to start. The biggest bit of advice I can give to someone is to start. And it sounds bizarre, but start with something small. So let's talk about exercise, for example. Getting yourself moving makes you feel better. Generally just makes you feel better. Like, the research is out there. It releases all these positive hormones in your body. It reduces the cortisol, which is in turn is good for fertility. So that's where I started. But it's kind of, well, what type of exercise do we need to be doing? And there's a lot of conflicting kind of evidence out there. We have to be careful with a bit of the evidence, because, like with anything, if you want to find a reason to do something, you can find a reason to justify it. So what I found myself doing was going through an awful lot of research and articles and data. Very boring to some, but I actually really enjoyed it.
Well, not just enjoyed, past tense, you still enjoy it. And like, quite often I'll be like, all right, mate, what are you up to? And you'll send me a picture of some like research paper or textbook, be like, oh, I'm just reading up on this new theory of this, that, or the other. And you should love it. But yeah, like, you know, it's tribute to you, because you take it seriously.
Well, it's important. And basically, like, you've got to be careful of what you're looking at. So what I did was I took like all this research and kind of found common ground between them. There is more, like, when we were going back 10 years when I went through this. So something like Google Scholar was like brand new and exciting. Do you know what I mean? And today it's just used commonplace. But what I found is, and a lot of the research suggests now is that low to moderate cardiovascular exercise is key. So you want to be avoiding really high intensity training for sustained amount of time. Resistance training is a positive thing. Always is. Without getting into too much detail, how that is structured and kind of the rest periods between your exercise and training sessions is really key. But it can sometimes be overcomplicated. So my advice to people is, you want to be training maybe 3 times a week in the gym. And then if you can get in 3 sessions a week where you're doing low to moderate exercise. So low to moderate exercise could be going for a walk, like a longer walk. It doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to be going on the world's longest hike. Just go out, 40-minute walk, you know, you tick the box. The national or government guidelines say that you should get about 150 minutes to moderate exercise a week. And you can split that up over 5 days, and it's 30 minutes a day, you know, and that's taking everything into account, from, you know, running, to jogging, walking, in the gym, all those kind of things. They come under this bracket. Obviously, you know, my job as the male fertility PT is to put that in programs for people, structure it in a way that fits their lifestyle and fits their needs, because everyone's needs are slightly different. For example, if you have relatively low testosterone, you can boost that by training more. And what happens is by lifting heavier weights, or heavy weights, I should say, your body gets used to producing testosterone. And that in itself then has a knock-on effect where you have a higher level of testosterone in your blood post-workout. But then your body gets used to making testosterone like that, so it stimulates it quicker.
Yeah. And as anyone probably in a situation where they are looking at fertility, they will find out very quickly that testosterone is key for men when it comes to that. I heard a saying once, and it's so true, that for blokes, testosterone is the tide that lifts all boats in the harbour.
Yeah.
We need it across the board for everything, and the balls, for example, need a testosterone-rich environment to produce sperm.
Yeah. And it does other things, like it increases like growth hormone in your body, which is also valuable for testosterone, sperm development. LH, it lowers or heightens that, which it needs to be done. And all these key hormones that are vital for sperm production, you can stimulate through weight training. It's such a fascinating science. And we're only just kind of like getting into it at the moment. The research is, there's still loads needs to be done, but that's the same with all, I think, all male, the whole bracket of male fertility. Like, there's so much more needs to be done, but that's where we are in terms of like, exercise. So you want to be doing around about 150 minutes, a week of low to moderate exercise, closer to the more moderate, I'd say. And you know, that includes CV and and weight training, so cardiovascular training and weight training. Don't exceed 5 hours. There's some really interesting research out there that shows that if you train for more than 5 hours, it can really, not at once, but over a week, it can really decrease your fertility health. So most of my clients, they train around 4 hours a week. You know, we keep it in that bracket. Yeah, so that's exercise. In a nutshell, we could be here for a long time talking about
it. Yeah, as we all know, and common sense suggests that exercise is good for our general health, for our heart health, etc., and cardiovascular health, which is really important just for longevity in general. And something you said is so true, is just start.
Yeah.
Because when we began our life fertility journey, I literally don't know any other words to say. In 2017, I wasn't going to the gym at the time. It wasn't part of my lifestyle at all. I had a pretty unhealthy lifestyle complete across the board, whether it's diet, lack of exercise, too much booze.
Yeah.
And I remember at one point, I think it was actually 2016, I had these like kind of patches on my cheeks, and I remember going to a doctor about them, and they said, oh yeah, it's potentially rosacea. Right. I didn't know what it was at the time, and it wasn't. Like, now in hindsight, I just changed my diet.
Yeah.
and you know, as a result of suddenly realizing I needed to for the fertility side of things, and it like cleared up so quickly. It just shows the crap I was putting in my body, that it was having a physical effect. And like a physical showing on my face. And I remember when I first wanted to start going into the gym, I just didn't have the motivation. And even though I had this massive, like, life-changing situation happening, I still had to like make myself go in the gym.
Yeah.
And I had these screensavers on my phone. They were like motivational quotes. And every time I picked up my phone, it would be that. I can't remember them now, you know, it's going back 7 years, but it would be things just to make me get in there. And I found that as soon as I got in the gym, it was fine. Like, it's just getting over that hurdle of getting in there. And I think I quickly identified, actually, that part of the issue with that was that I was training in the evenings.
Right.
And I mentioned on the last episode, eating the frog early.
Yeah,
that weird saying about, if you don't want to do something, just get it out of the way as early as possible. And so I thought, right, let's try the mornings. And that changed everything for me. Mm. And it's still my routine now. And it's gone from like having to have motivational quotes on my phone to actually now being like angry with myself if I don't go. And
because
it's literally part of my identity now, and it built up from them trying to get one or two sessions in a week to now it's my time. That's like my meditation now, is getting in the gym. It's my time to just release mentally, not think about anything. And what I love the most is, sorry to say this to a PT, but I love it. If I've forgotten how many reps or sets I've done, that's brilliant, because it just shows I haven't been thinking about it. I'm just away. And that's great, because I've tried actual meditation. It didn't work for me.
Yeah.
I found that in the gym, my mind just clears. And that is a great mental aspect of exercise as well. And I can't speak highly enough of it.
Well, you know, you've said it there. There's the physical side of it, which is what happens biologically in your body. And then there's the mental side of things, you know, and the psychological side of things. And that is, there's so much less known about that than there is about the physical side. The raw truth is exercising makes you feel good, and it's good for your body. Just when you're preparing for a fertility treatment, a cycle, journey, whatever you want to call it, you've just got to structure it slightly differently, because more isn't always better when it comes to your fertility. Those high, really high, stressful, intense workouts cause oxidative stress in your body, which kills cells. And part of that is sperm cells, you know, they get affected. And, you know, it heats up your body and kind of heats up your testicles, which I'll come to shortly, because I want to get things done in order, really.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we'll end up jumping all over the place. But you said a good word there that I think would be a good follow on, and that's diet. Like, diet is a lifestyle choice that we all have. There's a couple of things that really impact what we eat, if you really kind of look at it critically, and that's one, education and experience. Generally, you eat what you're brought up to eat. You know, if you had a poor childhood young, you'll continue that, because that's all you need, that's all you know, which can be a really hard thing to break, incredibly hard thing to break. Additionally, there's the other like barrier, which is finances. Like, it's expensive now to eat what people would deem well. And for me, like, if you're looking at the lifestyle changes that you want to make linked to your diet, you need to be looking at an organic diet is the best thing we can get ourselves on. But that comes with an additional price tag. Even though recently I had a little nosy around the supermarket, and because of the inflation and everything else that's happened now, it's not that much more expensive to buy something that's organic than that isn't. Like, so you have to kind of be really aware of what you're eating and putting in your mouth. So ideally you want it to be organic. If you can't afford organic, you want it to be as whole food as possible. Like, by whole food, I mean, it's not processed. If you can eat a whole food diet, you're doing the right thing. You know, it is the right thing that is within your control. You know, plenty of fruit and veg, high quality meats, eating regular. That's another thing, right? Some people, like, they skip dinners and they skip meals, or get a routine of when you know when you're going to eat and prep. I mean, these are a lot of, like, I mean, I'm throwing things out there, but it's just to give people an idea of really what they can
do. What about, on that topic, what about fasting? Because that's kind of like fashionable at the moment.
Fasting, I think fasting's got its place, okay? I think it needs to be done carefully. You need to really be aware of how it affects you, because it's not for everyone. But there is research to show that it is good for, you know, I wouldn't say your fertility, but it's good for your health. It's good for your health, because when you fast, your body basically starts to, after, I believe it's 36 hours, you've lost all your glycogen stores in your body, which then means that your body transfers to using fats as its main fuel. Now, if you have a long enough fast, what your body starts to do is to eat or damaged or dead cells in your body, which can then rejuvenate the growth of new cells. But we're looking at, like, when you get into the deeper fasts of like 72 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours, which, you know, I think professionally we need to kind of highlight needs to be done under the supervision of someone who knows really what they're doing in terms of their doctor. But there is definitely evidence to show that having certain eating windows is quite good for you. So for me, for example, I only have a 6-hour eating window a day. So I start eating at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I finish at 7 in the evenings. I make sure I'm done. If I stick to that, I feel great. I feel really good. When in the past, where I've been really, really strict with it, I found my body kind of naturally goes towards its what I'd call its baseline weight. So over, you know, 4, 5, 6 months of eating like that, I trim down to about 15 stone and I sit there comfortably. But my advice to people would be, especially if you are training regularly and you want to, you know, have the positive impact on your fertility, it would be eat regular. Don't necessarily dabble in fasting because you'd need expert help with it. Eat regular. Eat an organic diet if possible, but make sure whatever you're eating is a whole food diet. It's it can be a tricky subject because there's so much literature out there, and like I said before, if you're looking for something particular and you do research on it, you'll find it there somehow. So just be careful what you're looking at and the advice you're taking.
Confirmation bias.
It is. But it's all around us. Like from buying a product to, you know, what you should be eating to what you should be, you know, exercising and stuff like that. So you just got to be careful. What else? Obviously, just before this, I was on an Instagram Live with our sponsor, Xseed, talking about alcohol, which was a really interesting topic, especially as the fact of today is the 31st of January and a lot of people would have just finished Dry January. Really interesting topic. Personally, I advise all my clients to obviously stop drinking alcohol while they're going through their fertility treatments. The evidence is clear that heavy use of alcohol damages fertility health. It's clear there. What is less known is what you know, low to moderate intakes of alcohol does to your fertility, but you recommend to drink 14 units a week. If you're going to drink, it's better to stay away from it, both for a physically point of view, but also a mental point of view. It causes a lot of stress, alcohol, like to the brain, to the body, increased anxiety, depression. So if you can, what's already a stressful situation, yeah, in terms of a fertility journey, if you can take away alcohol, it takes away one stressor. So at least you can think clear. At least you can, you know, you have a clear mind and stable mood, less anxiety to face what's in front of you. Because we've both been there. It's a harsh, harsh experience.
Because that's the thing. People might think that it's a good escape and it helps them, like, forget about something, which is true. You know, you become intoxicated and you get that escape. But then the next day, it's like you said, you're putting on all that extra stress to your brain and your body. Your body the next day is then having to concentrate on flushing it out of your system. And that is almost solely what it'll be doing. So then it won't be repairing your muscles if you've worked out the day before. Stuff, you know, this is not my bag. This is just stuff that I've kind of picked up. But long term is, like, you know, I'm talking in the micro now. Say when after one drink, for it's like, you know, one evening on it. When I say in the long term, I'm talking the next day. Mm-hmm. So short term is the drinking, and the long term is the effect the next day. The lack of sleep, which is also key. Apologies if I step on any of your toes here, but it's going to affect your sleep that evening, and the next day it's the knock on effects, like I just mentioned, the physiological effects.
Yeah, it's basically everything that exercise would do for you in terms of increasing your testosterone, increasing your growth hormone in your LH levels, all those type of things. Drinking reverses it. So it stops all those things from happening. In terms of a fertility point of view for a man, drinking alcohol will decrease, even if it's over the short term, your body's ability to produce testosterone, which is the key hormone for sperm production. But what it would do as well is increase the production of estrogen, which as a man, we don't want too much. It's important for us, but we don't want too much in our body. So basically drinking unstabilizes those hormones.
And that's the thing. Not a lot of men know that we've got estrogen as men, but we do. Mm. And guess what? If you have excess belly fat, that's too much estrogen in your system.
Yeah. It's a bizarre thing. Women have testosterone as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
At a much lower level. But most people don't. I think if you ask someone generally, they kind of figure it out, but we don't think of it in the forefront of our head, do we?
Yeah.
That these hormones are in both of our bodies. That's the impact of alcohol. But I think.
But the thing is, in our society in England, it's bloody hard. There's make no bones about it. To kick booze is hard because our society glorifies it. You're seen to be more of a man if you can put away more pints.
Mm.
Almost every social event revolves around alcohol. Every work event, alcohol. And I did it. I did it for 5 months, and it was hard. But I had such a northern star of the fertility, such a big why, that I got through it and I did it, and that was including through Christmas.
Yeah.
And I remember we were at a Christmas do in Bank in London, this pretty nice bar, and I walked in and with a colleague and, you know, a friend as well, and he said, "What do you want?" And I said, "I'll have a nanny steak, the non-alcoholic brew dog." And he went, no, what do you want? And I said, I want a nanny steak. He goes, buy a proper beer or else I'm not getting you it. And I was like, nice one. And he went to the bar, came back, he didn't buy me it. And I said to him, looked him in the eye, I said, "Are you fucking joking?"
Yeah,
and he's like, "I told you." So I had to go and buy my own beer, well, non-alcoholic beer. And that's what we're up against. And I think often what it is in situations like that, you are highlighting their weakness, which is why he had an issue with me not drinking, because perhaps he would have loved to have done that and be able to do that and not ever having that real big why, he probably couldn't. And I think often if something like that is coming out in the fore, that's what it is. It's a reflection of what they cannot do.
I couldn't say any better, mate. Like, the why is the most important thing, because it's the why you revert back to when it's tough. Because it is. Listeners will know I gave up alcohol. I was going to say last year, but it was the year before now. I keep getting caught out with this new year, but I kept reverting back to the why because it was hard. And what I came to realize is that if I need to drink to be in the company that I'm in, it's the wrong company. It's not good for me. And you know what? I found myself initially, I wouldn't say I'm shy. I'm not a shy person, but social situations were trickier because everyone else was getting a bit looser and after a few beers and I was just me but I got used to it. I've got used to it. And actually now I like the fact that I can go out with friends and then we're off. We're going to go to another bar. And it's like, all right, lads, so I'm going home. And I go get in my car and I drive home and I get into bed and I get up in the next morning, look at my phone and they're all going, "Oh, my head hurts. And I just send them loads of abuse, really. I'm fine. What's wrong, lads? Do you want to go for a run? And then suddenly they're like, "Oh, I wish I had done that. I wish I hadn't done that." And it's like you get a greater appreciation for those smaller things, for those nice things of sleeping.
Getting up early and, it's hangxiety, I think they call that. As we previously discussed, wankxiety. This is hangxiety.
Is this another one you've made up?
No. That's I think quite a well-known one. But funnily enough, my friends and I, we kind of had this realization back in December. So like my day oneers, like my mates, we've all been mates since we were about five, and we were out. We tend to, these days with life, families and stuff, we only really go out twice a year if we can. But it's classic. It's one of those ones where you feel like you've seen them yesterday because we're all such good friends. But we went out for a Christmas drink and we just all, the day went on and we're in this bar and we're kind of looking around and we're like, well, none of us are out on the pool. None of us dance. And we now can't hear ourselves talk because this bar's too loud because there's a DJ on. And so we all just kind of thinned out and went home. And then since then, we all just said, like, this isn't, we all had that same feeling. We all came to it independently, but within the group, that we're done. We're done with going out for nights out to catch up. So come March, we are going to Penny Fan in Wales to go up the mountain and got a little Airbnb with a nice little hot tub. And it's going to be just. It's like exercise. It's being out in nature and fresh air all together.
Yep.
And crucially, not having anxiety the next day.
That's it. It's almost like an epiphany, isn't it? You're like, there's another world. I can enjoy life without doing this and feeling like this. But taking it back to the fertility side of things, reducing your alcohol will help balance your hormones, basically. And if you can avoid it completely, it just gives, it takes that, I called it a cocktail earlier, that cocktail out of your body, that those chemicals, all those toxins that you get from drinking, you're not going to engage with them. So it gives your body the best possible chance to keep producing that testosterone.
Yeah, because not only is the element of alcohol, like the impacts that have, but also most booze that we have is full of sugar.
Yeah.
So, the hormones, that sugar spike will be dragging your hormones up with it and then crashing off the other side with it as well. And that, guess what? Testosterone comes back to that again, is a hormone that's getting taken up with it and then back on the other side crashing and then having to restabilize. And it does have such a detrimental impact on your health, but also fertility health specifically.
Yeah, man. It's so avoid it. That's the bottom line, if you can. Well, just know your why.
Moderation, at the very least, moderation.
Yeah, moderation at the very least. And I think I'll always, now that I've experienced what I've experienced, like it had such, there was a clear improvement in my sperm quality when I wasn't drinking. So it's proven to me that is such an important thing. Next thing I guess we could talk about is smoking. Now, smoking it's always baffled me, smoking. Like, and this is just going to be talking as Kieran out loud. Like, there are no positives to it. I can see why someone might want to have a drink because you get a short bit of social, release. And I can see that. But for smoking, I can't see it, especially when so much research and so much data shows that it's horrific for your health. Holistically, part of this goes back to the fact of it wasn't long ago when you'd watch certain sports and there was advertising for tobacco everywhere and it was branded as the next big thing. There was no health issues. And I think a moment in time, there probably was a time when even health professionals didn't see it as a bad thing. It was very...
Well, mate, I'll jump in there.
Go back.
My nan, when she was 16, had tuberculosis.
Yeah,
she was as a treatment prescribed cigarettes because they thought it would encourage coughing to cough it up. So she actually passed away a couple of weeks ago, bless her. But she then for the rest of her life was like a smoking addict, courtesy of the NHS.
Oh, mate! Firstly, sorry to you about your nan, mate. I didn't know. And secondly, it's mad, isn't it? Like, this shows how far we've come, how far we've come to understand something like this. So I'm going to keep it really brief. If you smoke, you need to realize that it's not just damaging your fertility health, it's for damaging your health. And if you need support to stop that, go and see a doctor. They can help you. There's plenty of programs out there to help you stop that habit. You know, there's nicotine patches, all those types of things now. There's lots of things that can be done. But not just for your fertility health. Just do it for you, because you'll live longer.
And thankfully, doctors don't prescribe it these days.
Yeah, no one's not going to give you a fag just to see how it goes. honestly, that's a great story, that, mate.
Yeah, it's mad. She was in hospital for like a year with it, bless her. But
she would have been out 2 weeks if she hadn't stopped smoking. She started smoking.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but you know, she was 16 then. She lasted another 70 years, so
yeah,
she had a good innings, bless her. But yeah,
yeah, bless her. It's it's mad how far we've come, eh? Secondly, we should talk about stress. Like, stress is a real issue, and I think, we live in a very stressful world, don't we? There was a time, like, I've done a lot of research and reading on, like, ancestral habits and things like that. And part of that is, like, reading quite big into stress. So the reason that we all feel more anxiety than we used to, it's suggested, is the fact of actually we live such comfortable lives now. And we don't have what would be deemed as natural stressors. Like, I don't walk out my door and worry about, I don't know, a wolf biting me, or, you know, chasing me and killing me, or where my next meal is coming from, or can I find water? But if you go back thousands of years, that's where we got our stress from. So we didn't have time to worry about things that we worry about today. So we live in a very stressful world. It's about managing that. And the best way to do it is to find something that you like to do and to purposely build in time to do it. Like you mentioned earlier about you went to the gym, you found it very de-stressing. I know you like to surf as well. Getting in the water makes you feel good, mate. For me, it's gym. I love going to the gym. I also like climbing mountains. Like, I build things into my life where I step outside of reality for a short time and I can just be me and relax as much as possible. And I think it gets lost today. A lot of people get tangled up in work. Stress is work. Work is stress. And then you've got the stresses of the household bills because everything's going up. And then you've got other stresses of just general health, family, like externally. You can easily see how stress plays a factor in fertility because of the increased cortisol.
Yeah, which again is a hormone.
Which is a hormone, yeah.
Yeah.
But if you exercise and eat a good diet, that decreases. Like, it helps balance it out. And you'll get the same, like, hormone release for enjoyment from doing something that you really like. Say, for example, you like to go and watch, I don't know, motor racing. If that's your thing, go and do it. Like, and go and watch it. You'll get the same enjoyment as I would, you know, going in the gym and lifting my weights. But, and it will release that stress from you. You escape that reality for a short period.
No, I echo that. I've heard that before, because we are still primitive beings. We haven't evolved the amygdala in the brain, which is what triggers that fight or flight response. We haven't evolved that out.
No.
And what like you said, what would give us that in the past is if a bush was rustling in the background and you think, holy shit, that could be a lion.
Yeah.
But nowadays it's emails. An email come through and you'll see it, who it's from, like your boss or something, and immediately you're getting that, the fight or flight response kicks in, that stress hormone. Whether we're getting likes on phones and stuff like that, whether our social media is and the phones are very stressful. They are.
Yeah.
We are bound to them, and what I would say is there's many things you can do, and I think look it up, because there's a lot out there. There's a lot of really well-referenced, well-sourced articles about how to reduce your stress. A key one, if I could just give one big takeaway, is to do something that makes you forget that you've got a phone. And like you said, for me, that's surfing. It's quite obvious that you can't have your phone in there anyway.
Yeah.
But I don't even think about it. That's the what's key, is that I'm not thinking about, oh, I need to check my emails and all this, because you're just engaged in what you're doing right there and then, like flow state, essentially, where you're thinking about what you're doing there. And I know you'll get that in the gym. And it's just leave the phone.
Yeah.
Even if it's for an hour a day.
Yeah.
Just get off of it, because people will invade your space because they want you. They want this from you or that from you. Just have your own time. And it's a huge stress reliever. And if you can, don't make the first thing you do is check your phone in the mornings, because if your alarm is your phone, then suddenly you look at notifications and you're opening them. And if, again, other people are invading your headspace first thing in the morning, you wouldn't let them in your room, in your room, like through your window or through your door, to be like, oh, can you just do this? Can you do that? So why do we let them do it for our phones? If you can, leave your phone downstairs, then there's that reduced temptation to be scrolling late at night, and use an actual alarm clock so that wakes you up. You wake up a little bit more naturally, or if you can, get one of those light ones that eases you in.
I forgot what they're called. Mood lights?
I've heard Grow or something like that.
Yeah, so, I mean, this brings us quite well into the next kind of thing, and that's sleep, isn't it? Like, sleep is so important for our bodies. Like, it is, once again, it's very misunderstood. It's researched, but we still don't really know what happens when we sleep. But the only description you can give it is, you can run your phone, we'll use the phone as an example, you can run your phone until it runs out and it dies. We're the same. Like, if we don't get enough sleep, we slowly lose our ability to function. So that's why it's important that you try and get your 8 hours a night of sleep. And really, like, plan it. Like, I plan my sleep. Like, I know that Wednesday nights, because we often record on a Wednesday night, I have a slightly later bedtime. So I get up slightly later tomorrow. I don't do my really early thing, just so I make sure I get my 8 hours in. Like, I've planned my time. So while you're sleeping, your body repairs as well, which is, I think, probably something that a lot of people don't realize. So if you go to the gym and you exercise, when you go to sleep, your body starts repairing itself. It doesn't do much while it's awake. It might start a few, breaking down the protein into amino acids and getting everything ready, but it doesn't start building and repairing until you're asleep. And that's like the production of sperm as well. Like, while you're asleep, that work's happening, like your body's building itself, building cells. So ensuring that you get a good amount of sleep, once again, helps your testosterone levels, helps to keep that what we call homeostasis, so the balance of everything in your body, but also helps it repair and supercharges it for the next day. And about 8 hours is what you want. Some people need slightly less, some people would need slightly more. But on average, 8 hours is good. I prefer about 7 hours. And then once a week, I have a longer sleep of about 9 hours and I'm good. Yeah. But sleep's something you can't catch up with either. So if you, for example, usually have 8 hours and then one night you have 5 hours, so you've missed out on 3 hours. You can't catch that up. So you can't add 3 hours onto your next sleep. It doesn't work like that. You still only need 8 hours sleep the next day, and your body will sort itself out. You'll go into a deeper REM sleep, deeper sleep. And it's just an amazing thing. Like, I don't really know how else to explain it, because it's not really known how we do it or why we do it, but we need sleep.
Yeah. Who doesn't love getting in bed, eh?
Oh, mate, there's nothing better. The clean sheets. Yes. Clean sheets into bed and then just fluff that pillow. Oh, that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. No, you've hit there on the head. And thankfully, a lot of that kind of nonsense bro science that was going around a couple of years ago about hustle, 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 like work through, you know, if you can get by with 4 hours a night sleep or whatever it was that they would say, then that's an extra month, a year on everyone else. The hours you'll be working there where they're sleeping, there you'll be ahead of them and all this absolute nonsense. You won't be any further ahead because
you'd be tired.
Like, you're too tired to do anything. You won't be functioning properly. Your body won't be healing and repairing, like you said. So, yeah, let's something go to sleep.
Something that's very interesting and people should be aware of, especially when it comes to sleep, is seasonal changes. So when we are unconsciously, our bodies are entwined with the seasons, even if we don't realize it. So when the dark nights come in, we get tired early. And there's a reason for that. It's because the melatonin in our body goes up because the light goes down. So it tells our body it's time to sleep. So just be aware, like, obviously what season you're in might change the amount of sleep that you have. Just keep a track of it. So you might find that in the summer, I'm quite good on around 6.5 hours sleep. I feel good for it. But in the winter, if I did 6.5 hours, I'd really struggle. I need that 7, 8, 9 hours. So it's key to kind of just keep track of that. And don't think there's something wrong. Just think, well, what's the season doing? Yeah. You know, do I need a bit more now?
Absolutely. And you mentioned it, melatonin, the sleep hormone.
Yeah.
Our body needs to start producing that in the evening to really then, when you get in bed, that you're ready. You're not just lying there awake. And there are certain things that stop us producing that. Major one being blue light. So
blue lights, yeah.
From screens, from phones. So if we can get off them, the earlier the better. I'd say I try and knock mine on the head at 8 or 9, but you know, we're not all perfect. Sometimes I find myself scrolling, but I'm working on it, you know. But that it's being aware of it and knowing that it really is going to affect your sleep.
Yeah, it is. And So it's about having sleep hygiene, isn't it? They call it sleep hygiene. Just have a routine to go to bed. You know, mine is I've set features on my phone so certain apps shut off at 9, so I can't access them. And then I read, and all those articles that you say that I read them in bed just before I go to bed, and it's just like, if I read one article a day, that's 365 a year. And I know I'm also doing my health good by making sure that I'm doing something that, you know, shuts my brain down. I'm learning while I'm doing it. And I'll roll over and go to sleep. Just get that little routine before you go to bed. It's just as important as the one you get up when you get up. You know?
Yeah.
You just do it in reverse. That's what it feels like. So we mentioned it earlier, and this is testicular temperature. So, like, obviously keeping your balls cooler. You know, they hang on the outside of our bodies for a reason. The biggest things for these are, like, obviously avoid wearing, like, tight briefs and boxers and things. Try and wear baggier ones. They're not as comfortable. We all know they're not. But for sake of your fertility, doing it for 3 months, you know, it's not gonna ruin your life, is it? You just kind of look like you got, I always call them dad pants, because I remember my dad wearing these really baggy pants in the 80s. So you have to kind of get yourself a pair of those.
You're right.
It's also avoiding hot baths, avoiding saunas, hot tubs. You know, don't have your laptop on your lap. Keep it on a wooden desk. And if you are working at your laptop, don't sit there for hours. You know, if you can work standing up, do that. It's a lot better than sitting on your balls for 7 hours a day, because they just heat up. You What are the pouches that you use during your treatment? Would you recommend anything like that? Or when you
I didn't
when you
So yeah, after my microtesy, I bought these like gel ice packs from Amazon, and they're just refreezable, and I've actually still got them now. And but yeah, they really help with the swelling, like to post op to keep it down. As I said, I still got them now. My dad was around once, and I can't remember, he hurt himself somehow. And
did you give him one?
He's like, have you got any ice packs or peas or whatever? I went, yeah, I got some proper things for it. I went and got one out of the freezer. Yeah. And he's like, put it around. Oh, it was his knee, I think. And he put it around his knee.
You know,
I waited a good 10 minutes and went, that's been on my balls. But obviously, I washed them. But no, it's, there are, you know, products available out there.
I'm thinking more if someone's sitting for a long time, it's kind of like, what could we kind of suggest? Kind of some work you have to, don't you?
If you've got an office-based job and you're literally sat down all day, then your balls are encased by your thighs, and it will be heating them up. And that's exactly what you do not want when it comes to your balls, is that they hang lower because they're supposed to be around 2 degrees cooler than the rest of the body.
Yeah.
Sperm needs a cooler environment to thrive. And because of the modern lifestyle and jobs in offices, they're not good just sitting there kind of encased in our nice warm thighs.
It's a tricky thing to balance, though, because you've got work, you've got to earn money. People will be like, I've got to earn money and I've got to sit. So be conscious of it. That's what I'm going to say. You know, get up, give yourself that break. Wearing those baggier boxers, baggier trousers, give yourself some space. You know, give the lads some space to lay, rather than lay against you.
Absolutely. Well, you know, when it comes to offices, you can get standing desks and stuff. So yeah, there are options.
I don't think that if you ask for like air conditioner to people under your desk, it would go down well. What's that for? Well, it's fertility treatment. I just keep my balls warm. Cool.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of like the main, we've covered quite a bit tonight, mate. You know, going back to exercise, we've looked at diet, alcohol, sleep, stress, obviously temperature of your testicles. And we could sit here and talk for hours on all of these things. But hopefully that gives, you know, listeners enough advice to get started. They don't feel lost, because we both certainly did when we were told you got to do this, you got to do that. So start with one of those. As we said at the beginning, the important thing is just to start. Just to start. If I was going to recommend how to do it, I would write down, make a list of the things that you could possibly change out of those that we've talked about tonight, but also just generally things that you might need to change that could help your fertility, and then put them in order, prioritize which ones you're going to chip off first, and then just start with one. Once you master one, start with the next one. Once you've mastered that, start with the next one. If you do it all too quickly, you're at a much higher level of, you know, stumbling, falling, and not, you know, having any impact. It will cause you more stress almost.
Yeah.
So identify what you need to do, plan when you're going to do it, and slowly implement them. And don't beat yourself up about them. Like, if you're going to change your diet, and for one day you're out and you eat something that's slightly more unhealthy, you know, it's not going to derail you. It's about what you do consistently, not what you do as a one-off.
Ah, yeah. I mean, it's 80%. You know, if you can stick to 80%, good. And what's important is, like, for example, to take diet, like you mentioned. If you eat something bad, don't let it derail your whole day and just think, oh, fuck it, I've had that bad meal or whatever. I may as well just blow out for the rest of the day, because then you can end up doing 4,000 calories, but bad calories as well. So just be like, no, that's all right. I've had that. It's all good. Back on the horse.
And it's, you know, I'll back that up with if you do end up going totally off piste with it, don't beat yourself up about that either. Just think, well, yeah, I've had a bad day, I'm going to get back on it.
And it's the same principle, just don't let that then lead into the second day.
Yeah, yeah. Generally, I find that I remember having those bad days, especially around alcohol and things like that. And once you have a sleep, it's almost like a reset, isn't it? You can go again.
Yeah.
I had one question come in for today, and that is...
I forgot to do the question box.
It's all right, buddy.
Sorry, mate.
I did it. I did it a bit later, didn't I? So it wasn't out there for as long. But we did get a question in, and is there any advice on how to boost testosterone without medication? Now, obviously, from my experience, I've got a point of view on this, but it'd be interesting to see what advice you've got as well, mate, because obviously you've looked at this in the past. But let me talk about what I would suggest. First of all, okay, the main thing is lifting weights helps boost testosterone. Now, the research out there suggests that if you lift around about 70% of something called your one rep max, so you need to figure out how much you can lift for one rep, and then you figure out what 70% of that is. So let's round it up nice and simply. If you're going to do a bench press and you can lift 100 kilograms, 70% of that is 70 kilograms. So if you can lift 70%, so 70 kilograms, for 8 to 10 reps, and you can do that for around about 10 sets. Okay, now it sounds a lot. I wouldn't suggest doing 10 sets of one exercise. I would split that over, say, a number of exercises. But you're still lifting within the 70% range of what you can lift. With around about 2 minutes rest in between each set, that's kind of currently what's out there and being very heavily seen as positively having an impact on your post-exercise testosterone. And as we've talked previously, like if you can get your body used to producing testosterone, it's going to start manufacturing it easier and better. Yeah. So 8 to 10 reps of around 70% of your maximum weight you can lift for around 10 sets, split over, different exercises. Otherwise, it's a long bench or a squatting session. So what would your advice be, man, around that?
Essentially, everything we've talked about in this episode will aid your testosterone. Sleep, diet, exercise, and then, like, the bits in between that you've mentioned, like what type of exercise. So, for example, when I stopped, my body stopped producing it, I tried everything I could to get it back up to a level without having to go on TRT, which I am now on. But gave up booze, for example. But exercise, what I've found, like you just said, is that weights is a lot better. And like your really, really long runs, your really, really long cycles, for example, are not as good for your testosterone. They will
impact
it.
Don't go near them. They're really detrimental.
Yeah. And then with diet, I started following a low glycemic diet, which is actually common for people with diabetes, because the whole point of it is that it's not spiking, crashing your blood sugar. And it's what I mentioned earlier about alcohol does that, because there's so much sugar in it.
Yeah.
So it keeps you, it's all about slow release foods. So for example, anything that we digest quickly sends your blood sugar spiking as well. And then that's taking your testosterone up with it, all of your hormones, and then crashing off the other side. And also then that gives you the kind of the hangriness, and then that makes you then reach for the bad foods, because they'll fill you up and they're just convenient. So if you can just go for foods that digest slowly and fill you for longer, that just keeps you on a more even keel with your blood sugar levels, which aids testosterone.
That's great advice, man. It's I think it's a question that we could literally do a podcast on.
Yeah.
Like it's like, and this is what we're going to be looking at, obviously, with in the future series and episodes. We want to be picking specific things like this and talking about them. But anyone that wants to reach out and send us questions, you know, we'll answer them the best that we can. And if we don't know the answers, what we would do is we would bank them. And then when we had the correct people on, we'd ask them then.
Or, you know, even if it's before then, we both have enough contacts in the industry to get
100%. Yeah, we
can questions answers. So
yeah. We could get answers, can't we? Well, that brings us to a nice ending, doesn't it, mate?
It does indeed.
Thanks for listening. If this episode has helped you, do us a quick favour and leave us a review. You don't even have to use your real name. Every single review helps another man find this show when he needs it the most. It's honestly the best way you can help the next guy. If you've got a question or something you'd like us to cover on the mailbag, drop us an email at themalefertilitypodcast@gmail.com. We read every message and we love hearing from our listeners. And if you'd like a bit more expert guidance and support from other men on the same journey as you, you're welcome to join our free private community at nexusfertility.com. It's totally confidential and designed just for you by guys that get it. For our latest updates, follow us on social media at The Male Fertility Podcast. And remember, gents, you're not on your own.